You are listening to the Intercoastal Podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Intercoastal Podcast, where we share all of the best that Beaufort, Port Royal, and the Sea Islands has to offer. To get us started, we're going to kick off our episode with Annie from Balance Bar and Fitness. She's our stakeholder sponsorship for this episode. Thanks for joining us today, Annie.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Of course. We're excited to talk about it. So first of all, would you mind just sharing what you guys do at the Balance Bar and Fitness?
Yes, absolutely. So we are a boutique fitness studio here in Beaufort. We offer bar, yoga, and high intensity interval training, but our biggest mission and goal is to really keep fitness fun and to help elevate our community through mindful movement and bring people together. So we are a fitness studio, but it's more about community and connection.
Beautiful. I love that. I'm all about bringing in that element of fun to fitness. So do you offer classes how do you structure it?
Yeah, great question. So we do offer classes. We offer multiple classes a day, 7 days a week, and people can join us either just for a drop-in class or they can become a member and join us as many times a week as they'd like.
Perfect. We love that. And do you help teach the classes or do you just help run it?
I do. I teach. I'm not currently teaching. I just had my husband and I welcomed our first child last month.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you so much. And I was just saying before we pressed record, this is the longest I've been without teaching a class since I started teaching, and I'm very eager to get back to our community.
I believe that. It's a great thing that you did, and congrats on the baby. We love that. But I understand it's like you kind of want to get back into your routine, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Well, that's awesome. So my next question, I think it's possibly the most important one, is where can people find you if they want to either sign up for a membership, a drop-in class, or just find out where you're located?
Best place to go would be our website, which is just our name, balancebarandfitness.com. And then we are pretty active on the social media channels as well, Facebook and Instagram, just Balance Bar and Fitness. And our physical studio is located, if you're familiar with Beaufort, in the Beaufort Town Center on Boundary Street.
Very nice. Perfect. Love to hear it because we want to make sure that people know where to find you and get those great classes. You know, fitness is fantastic. So what are also your hours? I'm curious.
You know, that's a great question. Our hours do tend to fluctuate just based on the classes offered any given day. But we always have at least one, if not two, morning to mid-morning classes. We offer a noon class several times a week, early afternoon around 4:30, and then a 6 p.m. And then obviously on Saturday and Sundays, we're more focused on the morning times. But we also launched last year. Our business had to be a little creative, as we all did.
Right.
So if those hours don't work for you, we do have an on-demand library of classes that you can stream from home 24/7.
That's really cool.
Yeah, we called that our quarantine baby.
There you go. I love it. So do you have to be a member to access those?
You do not. No, anybody can access those. It's similar to a streaming service. You're able to enjoy 2 weeks of a free trial, after okay. Which it's just $20 a month, and that's hosted on Vimeo.
That's awesome. I love that you guys, I always love hearing how people get so creative during the last year, because it was a very unique year for everyone.
Yes. And a big thing for us, myself personally, kind of what got me into group fitness in the first place is just as an outlet for, you know, relieving stress and prioritizing mental health. So it was really important to us last year to find a way to keep our community moving, even if we didn't necessarily feel safe coming all together.
No, I agree. I love having classes like that and being able to be engaged in a way that's, I feel like, good for your mind and your body. So doing awesome things. Well, is there any last thing that you want to share about Balance Bar and fitness with us that I missed asking you about?
Yeah, I would. I think a big question that we get from people maybe just starting out on their fitness journey or considering starting out on their fitness journey, especially coming out of this past year and maybe being a little bit more sedentary, is just where to start and what
that
class.
That is a good question.
What class is best for beginners, or, you know, I've never done this before, or I'm not flexible. Can I still do yoga? And my biggest answer would be to just get started wherever you are. That's another big priority for us, is just making our classes accessible. And our teachers are highly knowledgeable and certified and able to teach to all levels of the room. So, you know, it can be intimidating to try something new, but just know that when you walk through the doors, that's the hardest part, honestly, and will motivate and encourage you every step of the way.
Perfect. That was beautifully put. And I think perfectly sums up how inviting you guys are, and everyone's going to love it. So, you know, whether you're local or visiting, you know, definitely stop by for a class.
Yes, please. We'd love to see you.
Awesome. Thanks so much for sharing with us, Annie. And now let me introduce our main guest for this episode, Josie Olsvig. She is the author of Gullah Tears and an awesome Gullah Geechee children's book. Thanks for being here with us today.
Thank you.
So to start us off, would you actually mind giving us a little bit of your background before you became an author? Because I think it's fascinating to hear about your journey.
Well, it has been an interesting journey of about 7 years. I actually am a lawyer and social worker by training. I was a social worker for about 5 years first, and then went on, got a law degree, and worked with child abuse, domestic violence, sex offenses, and human trafficking for about 35 years total. Most of that time, I was a prosecuting attorney. But I did most of my work in Ohio and Washington, D.C., Fairfax County, around that area. But I was living in Ohio towards the end of my career when I started to have a series of dreams. And I had grown up in the inner city, and I had no idea what plantations looked like. But I started to have a series of very vivid dreams about a plantation. And a master, a white aristocratic master, engaged in an argument with his enslaved mistress, or really a concubine. She didn't have a choice. And it was like sitting in a movie theater about five rows back. It was very vivid. I could still tell you what the buckles on his shoes looked like. He had on a morning coat. I remember the stitching. He had a white shirt with ruffles and lace on it. He had white hair. And the enslaved woman was, I would say, about 5'9", very slender. She had on a blue calico dress with pink flowers and some peach in it. She had a pale blue choker on, and she had pale green eyes. And they started arguing. She wanted her manumission papers, or freedom papers, and he refused to give it to her. And he got enraged and then eventually grabbed her by the back of her head, grabbed her hair, and plunged her head into this pool of water. And in my dream state, I could feel him grabbing the back of my head, and I could feel the cold water hit my face, and I saw my right arm flailing as he was holding my head underwater. And then eventually I felt my body go limp. And so I had this dream about 6 or 8 times, and it wasn't like any other dream I ever had. This was full color, like a movie. Most of my dreams are like gray, black, and white. So I didn't know the meaning, and I am Catholic, but I'm not overly religious. At that time, I would call myself a once a month Catholic. But I started praying to God, what does this dream mean? And eventually it's like the camera panned to the right, and I saw this child that was their child sitting on the ground crying, which meant to me that they are descendants of this couple. And I'm like, okay, God, but what do you want me to do with this? And I'm still in this period of questioning, what am I to do? And about 2 months later, my husband got a transfer to Charleston out of the blue. And I went ahead and I picked out a house, and not knowing the significance of the house, I settled on this house in Mount Pleasant. And I later found out that the house was actually on the former grounds of a plantation. And a couple months later, I went and took a tour of the plantation grounds. And as I'm riding along with a group of people on this wagon, on this tour, listening to somebody define everything that's around us, all of a sudden I get this chill and the hair on my arm stood up. I get this chill up my back and I look and I see what I had seen in the dream.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yes. So I'm like, okay, God, I'm getting the message. I'm here to tell this story, but how do I tell this story? You know, what am I to do with it? And the message I was getting is to tell the truth about what happened. But still, I'm questioning how am I to do this, to write? Because I'm not a writer. I am a lawyer, but I'm a prosecutor.
Right.
I write
very
complaints.
Different writing styles.
Yes. I write complaints. I write responses. The longest thing I ever wrote was an appellate brief. And so I'm like, God, I think you have the wrong extension. This isn't the job for me, you know? So, but I did start reading about the area and the Gullah culture and the uniqueness of Charleston with the transatlantic slave trade. Charleston was unique. It was the epicenter of the transatlantic slave trade, or more than half of the slaver ships landed at Gadsden's Wharf. That's why the International African American Museum is being built there and will open next year. 84% of African Americans can now trace their heritage to Gadsden's Wharf, including Michelle Obama.
Wow.
And the masters here were what were called harsh masters. The people that founded the plantations here were actually from Barbados. They didn't come directly from England, although they were of English descent. In the Caribbean, there had been sugar plantations for quite some time, and they had already established a black code that was very harsh, and they believed in very harsh punishment for even minor infractions, where they would do things like hack off your nose or hack off a hand. And that kind of thinking was brought to Charleston, and their black code, almost word for word, was adopted here. So much of their practices were adopted, and it was just a much more harsh practice. I mean, slavery in and of itself is harsh, but this was the most brutal type of slavery that existed. And so our practices were different. And that's why I tried to set out in my book what was different about the practices in Charleston and how plantations worked and why certain slaves, why we took from the West Coast of Africa to bring slaves here to work the plantations.
Thank you for sharing all of that history. Would you mind just sharing with us who the Gullah people are now so that we can get a better feel for who they are?
Sure, I'd love to. The Gullah people are descendants of enslaved workers that were brought here from the Ivory Coast, the west coast of Africa. And they were brought here specifically because of their knowledge and how to grow rice. The English planters hadn't had any success in trying to grow rice. It's a very complicated plant. And they had tried for quite some time, but were never able to do it. But the West Africans had been growing it for over 2,000 years and were very successful with it. Growing rice is very complicated. It has 5 stages of growth where you have to build dikes, you have to be able to drain the water, and it's also very labor intensive because you have to weed it, you have to chop it, you have to cut it back. And then after you harvest it, you have to pound it in a pestle and mortar that almost looks like a butter churn. And then you have to fan it with baskets. And they made a very specific sweetgrass basket that was used as a large fanner basket, almost the size of smaller than a hula hoop. But it was a big round basket that was used to toss the rice in the air and to separate the rice from the husk. But they had they were very knowledgeable about growing rice, and that's why they were brought here. They were also very specific tribes that were selected because of their muscling, their longevity, and kind of sturdiness, if you will, that they looked for certain tribes. Yeah. And when they were first brought here, and after they came over on slaver ships, they initially stopped at the pest houses at Sullivan's Island. And they were there for a couple of weeks to determine whether they had any pestilence or diseases. But then they were brought to Gadsden's Wharf and unloaded. And generally, at least initially, they were taken out to the open air markets. One of the famous ones was in front of the customs house in downtown Charleston. And they were stripped naked and were forced to do things like jump and, you know, do different kinds of things. They would inspect their teeth. That for women, they would squeeze their breasts and feel their hips and things of that nature. And they would do this in the open air. But they would try to judge their athletic ability and their health. And prior to the sale, they would take them into a building or into a tent and put oils on their skin, try to clean their hair and make them look better than in better health than they actually were. But they just had them in the open air. Eventually, though, the statutes for the city changed because white women were offended by seeing naked bodies. It wasn't done for the black people. It was done for the white women who were offended. So eventually, slave markets were established in downtown Charleston, and it was all taken indoors. And we do have one remaining slave market that's near the waterfront. It's now a museum.
That is such a sad history, but it's, I think, an important part of our history to talk about. So, no, thank you for being willing to share it. And I'm curious kind of how you, I mean, you shared your dream, but how did you get to this place where this is something you wanted to write about?
From my own growing up, I understand the process of pain and trauma. And I guess I felt, you know, it's been an unsteady road. I didn't feel I was the person really for this job, but I understand pain and hardship. And so I guess I grew over time to understand why I was the person chosen. I had grown up in the inner city in poverty, and I had experienced a lot of hardship myself. I had been the victim of violent crimes. I experienced domestic violence. And I grew up not only in a very violent household, but in a very violent community in a violent time in our country. I was born in the 50s, grew up in the 60s. And that was when a lot of racial strife was going on then. I actually, in my own high school cafeteria, was beaten up by the chains of Rap Brown. We were greatly outnumbered. I've been held hostage at gunpoint. So I understand trauma, I understand hardship. And I think that's one reason that I was the one called to do this. It wasn't just my understanding of social work and the law, but my own personal experience that led me to be the one to be called. I also think that my training as a lawyer, though, was very helpful, because I've done a lot of archival research for this. I've gone everywhere from Hilton Head in Savannah up to Washington, D.C. I've done research at the Library of Congress, at the National Archives, at the National Museum for African American History and Culture, and a lot of places in between. I think I have over 300 secondary sources now that I look through all the time, trying to gain more and more knowledge about what has happened in our country. And I got to tell you, it's just heartbreaking. I was thinking last night as I was reading about the Civil War and Reconstruction, all the people who have died, if we look at our 300-year history, looking at the capture of Africans in their native land, how they were captured, then forced to walk to the coast, and many died along the way there. And then they were put into slaver ships under horrific conditions, held in little cells and just fed gruel. And they had to lay in their own waste for about 5 or 6 weeks. And that's if things went well. And then others died along the way as well. And they just tossed the bodies overboard. And sharks, they even have been able to show that there were trends of how sharks would follow these slaver ships, the feeding patterns changed to follow the slaver ships to feed on the dead bodies that were tossed over. And then they came here and became slaves, and where the average life expectancy was 7 years, which is still, interestingly enough, the average life expectancy of a slave now. I don't know if you're aware, but with human trafficking, it is now 4 times bigger than the African slave trade ever was. And the life expectancy of a slave, even today, is 7 years.
That's so heartbreaking.
Yes. And so move it forward to now, I'm researching about the Civil War. We lost more people, and this is looking at both sides, Union and Confederate, in that war than all other wars combined.
Wow.
Then go to Reconstruction, what happened after that, that I was reading in South Carolina, it kind of became, I don't want to say a hobby, but almost like deer hunting or something, how in the upcountry, vigilante groups would go out and hunt Black people to kill just as recompense for them running off in the Civil War, because particularly here in Beaufort, when the Union troops came, the enslaved Black people went to join the Union troops for protection. And a lot of the slave masters and whites generally resented that. They were very angry that, as they would call it, their people went to the Yankee side. And so they would go out looking at night for people to lynch. And that's why Grant had to send down Union forces to enforce the laws of Reconstruction.
Yeah. Our history's gone through some very heartbreaking and trying times, for sure. Like, every time I hear about this, I get so emotional, but it's a, like I said, a story that needs to be told. And one of my questions actually was going to be, how did you get all of your information? But you shared a lot of that already with going through those archives and talking to all those different people.
I kind of started out in this speaking to gullahs in the Mount Pleasant and Charleston community, kind of anybody who would talk to me. And many of them were the Sweetgrass basket makers, particularly okay. in Mount Pleasant, along Route 17. There are women with booths set up, and they would be by themselves selling baskets, and I'd start talking to them about their history. And then it was at festivals or at plantations. And so I talked one-on-one. That's the one thing I felt very good about, is all my conversations with gullahs were one-on-one. And some of them were in their home. So I think they felt comfortable sharing with me their history. But then I went to plantations and other historic sites around the area. Actually, again, all the way up the coast, historic sites. And there were a lot of other resources I went to. I've gone to slave markets. I've gone to forts. I've gone to civil rights museums, and I've also interviewed historians, local historians all along the coast, particularly here in Charleston and Beaufort, people who have done research for 30, 40 years. And I've gained a lot of information that way.
Very cool. I'm just curious, was one of those Victoria Smalls?
Yes. Actually, I met her a period of years ago at conferences, which brings up another resource. I've gone to regional and national conferences, and I met her at one sponsored by the Slave Dwelling Project.
Okay.
That's based up in Latson, but that a regional conference that was held at, I think, Middle Tennessee University.
Very nice. Yeah, we love Victoria. We've had her on the podcast a couple times, and I know that she's a wealth of knowledge, so I figured she'd be a good resource for you to talk to about all of this.
Yes.
Well, I do want to take a moment to just share some of the successes that you've had with your books. I know we were talking earlier that you recently, just actually this week, were awarded some awards for them. And I think that's really incredible and an awesome kind of benefit of you taking the time to share these stories and to really put them out there out in the world. So I just want to say congratulations. And would you
Thank
mind
you.
Just letting people know what those awards were for?
Yes. Actually, I think it was just like 3 days ago or so, I was notified that I won a total of 6 awards through the National Book Awards with Firebird. And initially, I just read that I won an award for Gullah Tears for African American History, and then also one for Growing Up Gullah, for African American history. And I stopped reading this very lengthy email, but then realized I won four more. And one was for the children's book on cultural heritage. One is for the cover of the book for Growing Up Gullah. And then also for the illustrations, which people love the illustrations. As hard as I worked on making sure that all the information was accurate within it and that the Gullah community approved of it, people just fall in love with the illustrations that are done in the Gullah style. It's the very colorful primary colors, but I work
very
hard. They're very
beautiful.
Yeah, they're authentic Gullah pictures, and I worked very hard to make sure they accurately portrayed the Gullah culture, but I got an award for that, and seems like something else, but there was a total of six. So I was very happy to receive that. It's kind of, I don't know, you receive some confirmation of all that work.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So that just kind of leads into my last question I have for you, which is, what do you have planned next?
Well, there's a couple things going on. One, we are working on a mini-series based on the novel. And another kind of God moment, if you will. Someone who is a screenwriter out in L.A., has been working out there for over 40 years, been very successful. I actually went to elementary school with him. And he reached out to me after 50 years and said, "What are you up to?" And so I told him what I was doing, and he told me what he was doing, and I asked him to look at my book, and he did, and he loved it, and he said, "This story needs to be told." And he thinks it's timely because of what's currently going on in our country with racial strife. And so he has written what is called a treatment for the book. He does take the chapters out of sequence, but I think he puts the most powerful chapters first. I think it's like chapter 20 or 24, which is Dinner at the Big House, would be the first episode of the miniseries.
Wow.
So we're moving forward with that. And the screenwriter, David Matthews, just finished a movie with Will Smith. So he's pretty well known out in LA. We're hoping that this will really take off, but I'm prepared. This can take a year, two or three. I mean, when it actually is going to be on the screen, we don't know. But I'm very hopeful about that. And I'm encouraging them to do some of the filming here locally.
Which would be perfect.
Yes. So I also am going to start going out nationally speaking. I have in December a couple speaking events planned in Ohio. And then I'm going to be doing a book tour up through New England. Starting at Bard College in New York and the Hudson Valley, proceeding up north through the Finger Lakes, then over to Vermont and into New Hampshire, ending in Durham at UNH is what we're planning right now.
That's awesome. You've got a lot to look forward to.
Yes. I feel like my books are really teaching tools. They're not so much for leisure reading and entertainment, but I kind of see my role as being an educator and an advocate to enlighten people about our history and make them aware of what's happened in our country for the past 300 years and what's going on now, because I think most people are unaware.
I think that that's an amazing process that you're going through and journey. And thank you for being willing to share these stories and to put in the time to, really research and make it authentic as you can. I think it's something that we really need. And I just want to say thank you and that we appreciate the time that you've taken with us today to talk about Gullah Tears and to your other books.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I've enjoyed speaking with you.
That's great. I look forward to seeing what else you accomplish and other books that you release, because I'm sure that there will be plenty more.
Oh, yes.
Because you have so much research behind you.
Yes. And I guess I didn't mention that this first book, Gullah Tears, is really the first in a series. I'm currently working on a book that will be about the Civil War. I think I'm going to have to make Reconstruction its own separate book, but I plan to take it up through the Tuskegee Airmen, because there is a link between the Tuskegee Airmen and the Penn Center and the Port Royal Experiment here in Beaufort. But that's my plan, to do the series of books and then I'm done.
There you go. It's very nice. I love it. And I think we'll have to probably bring you back on as you get more of your books out and just stay in touch.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. It was great talking with you, Josie.
All right. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Awesome. Well, now we're going to hear the highlights of what's coming up from Daquan.
Hey, guys. Daquan here again. Just to give you a couple updates of the events happening in Beaufort as we wrap up October and move into November. We're in the middle of fall as the weather starts to cool and the humidity starts to go away here in Beaufort. And every third Thursday in downtown Beaufort, live after 5, we get outside, get some live music, have some great food, see the town, shop in the local stores. It's a great way to enjoy Beaufort and everything Beaufort has to offer in downtown.
It's the perfect weather to be outside at this time of year in Beaufort.
Yes, it is. Another event Beaufort has is the Beaufort Fall Art Walk. It's a great way to see the art that Beaufort has to offer from the local artists in the area. And that is October 22nd. Another event happening on October 22nd is the Fall Festival of Houses and Gardens. So if you like Beaufort and you like the type of atmosphere Beaufort offers because of the home and the area and the nature of the area, the Fall Festival is a great way to experience everything that the area has to offer.
Sounds beautiful.
Yes, it is. On the October 23rd, Loco Gardeners Fall Festival happens, and it's also another festival happening in the area that, you know, gardeners can put their work on display, and that way everyone can see just what Beaufort has to offer again.
Guys, I have a busy week coming up in next month or so, too.
Yes, with a lot of fall festivals happening, a lot of people like to get outside right before Halloween, and what bit better way to get outside for Halloween with Beaufort's Spooky Halloween Party happening downtown, yes, where they give candy to kids and invite kids to come into the stores, and there's different games and stuff happening in town. Just that way the whole community can experience Halloween in a safe environment and actually enjoy getting out.
Love it.
And then going into November, the 6th annual Pat Conroy Festival takes place on November 4th to go ahead and kick November off with a bang. That way we can celebrate Pat Conroy and everything that he has done in his great, amazing writing, and then also celebrate other writers also.
Perfect. We love to hear it. And if you haven't already, go check out our Pat Conroy episode that we've previously done on the podcast.
And that will wrap up the events segment for this episode. It was a great episode. Thank you, Natasha. And we look forward to bringing you the next events in the next episode.
Perfect. We love hearing from you and everything that's going on in the community. And thank you, everyone, that joined us on this podcast episode today. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we will talk to you all next time. This has been another episode of the Intercoastal Podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network, hosted by Natasha Lai, produced by Relic.